Hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And here we are with episode 91 of Destroy All Culture with Aiden Morgan and me, Adam P. Nave.
91.
More than 90.
You gotta sing it because you know what they say, lucky 91, but it's not lucky unless you sing it.
I've never heard lucky 91. Is that a thing?
No.
Okay. No, it could be like a Canadian thing. I don't know.
I was trying to make it a thing, but like my nerve failed me in that instant. Yeah.
So, actually, pursuing something we were just randomly discussing before the show, The Gifted did get picked up for a second season, by the way.
It did, yeah. That's nice.
So, awesome.
And, so did Marvel's Runaways, which you haven't seen, but
I
have, so...
I have heard the hysterical that apparently, and again, not that I cared, I guess I'm spoiling for anyone who hasn't watched it, but they actually don't run away until the last episode of the season?
Yeah. Yeah, that was getting a little annoying.
I get it. You want to take the time and build up, because you have the space, you can build up the, probably build up the parents more, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's the idea. But I think what they did, like, I mean, this is, welcome to peak TV. Like, this is Preacher all over again, where they took one season to finally leave the town. And in some ways, now I haven't seen it, so I'm not going to go into, you haven't seen it, so I won't go into spoiler territory. Oh, okay. In some ways, it was a good move to bring the parents in because, I mean, as good as the comic was, it was very centered on the kids, and you never really knew much about the parents beyond the fact that they were sort of seemed like good guys, turned out to be bad guys, and there wasn't much more development. Right. And this, I mean, this one is, I think, trying to appeal to adults as well by actually making the show partly about adults.
I was going to toss something else in that's a little like, and I don't mean this to sound kind of like, look at me, but it's a little bit look at me, so forgive me. But as somebody who's had some initial talks about translating, you know, about selling rights to something for TV,
mm-hmm.
one of the big things we kept getting told was like, the comic is great, you know, the storyline is great. But you need more, like, you need more for TV.
Mm-hmm. You need more story.
You need, not even, oh, I mean, yes, more story, but also just more, you have more time available in different ways to build out the cast, to build out side stuff, to,
mm-hmm.
so you always end up with that. I mean, it's a good thing, because, like, again, like, it, when you take a TV show and, like, they do, like, a comic adaptation, you know, the rules, like, an episode is, like, 4 issues of a comic, right? Because they're trying to fit in all the side stuff you would normally have in a TV show.
Right.
Whereas if you just look at actual plot, there's probably a comic's worth of actual plot in there. So it's a weird push and pull.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, that makes sense. Runaways does... the solutions they come up with to fill those gaps are... I would say they're partly successful. There seems to be a problem in some episodes where they just don't seem to have a handle on the characters. So it's one of those things where in one scene they'll seem to be one character, and then they'll just sort of switch gears in ways that you can't quite figure out for like later scenes. And you're like, is this just, are they just being jerked around by the plot? But I think there were just too many ideas that they were trying to cook in. And it didn't always come out right.
I don't think it would have been a noticeable shift, really, if the show wasn't called Runaways. Like, that's their big... That's what they're kind of fighting against, is like...
I know.
We're called Runaways, but they don't. It's just...
Oh, there's one part of which they have not yet run away, but they're definitely sort of all... They're cohering as a group. Like, it's about them coming together as a group, right? Because that's kind of glossed over in the comic. They're
thrown together.
Friends, and then they're thrown together, and they're on the run, right? Which works perfectly for that. This, they have, like, pre-existing relationships with conflict built in that they have to sort of overcome to become a group.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's some of that in the comic that's kind of alluded to, and it comes out later.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, you can do it either way, and as the comic shows. Like, they did it that way. But I also understand the constraints of a TV show.
it's harder. And like with Preacher, I mean, well, although Preacher fucked with us in a weird way.
It's true.
Well, just because, you know, Preacher, you felt like, well, they want to make sure they have a budget because changing locations every week or so is a problem. And this is what Runaways is going to have to deal with. And Preacher, of course, I don't want to say famously, but in my mind, famously, because I just don't believe they did it. We're like, okay, second season, we're on the road. And then they stayed in the same location all season? And
right.
They did it in a way that, like, you didn't really notice for a little bit. Because you felt like, well, now they might get back on the road at any minute.
That's true, but they parked in that, in Cassidy's father's place for quite a bit, for example. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it wasn't like the Fugitive, for example, where it's just literally like, or the Incredible Hulk or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, and that is part of the problem, is just some of these stories rely on scene changes, which are cheap in comics. But yeah, I don't know where that goes for TV. Like, you need to figure that shit out somehow. It's kind of like what Heroes was intending to be originally, and then couldn't be. And the network, like, kind of forced them to not be the thing they wanted to be.
Right.
Which I think damned the show. Which was a different group of characters every year, except you go, well, but wait, people like these characters, so let's not get rid of the buy-in we have with the characters.
Right.
Which sounds great from an executive position, but when your premise wasn't built to keep going with these characters...
You run out of story for them.
Right.
Which is precisely... what happened.
So, yeah, I think there's some level of needing to understand that, like, some of this stuff sounds like a great idea, but TV doesn't actually allow for it, and let's be honest about that, for finally. And just, you know, stop trying to build stuff that just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think if there's any other shows that, like, any other comic adaptations that did that. Like, just... foundered on like the issue of adaptation. In movies, of course, there's Steel, but I mean, yeah, I don't know what.
Oh, Steel.
I really want to like get a copy of that and just
good
rip.
Luck. It's not on anything.
I know, and I just want to find it and be able to rip that the portion of him going up the elevator.
Yeah.
Or the escalator, I mean. Just cause. I mean,
it's so great.
Yeah.
But you know, it is. There are little weird things like that with adaptations where, you know, you kind of go, well, but if this is intrinsic to the story, and it's like, does it have to be? Can we just focus on the characters? Which is great, but you've built up an expectation, you know? It's why there are certain properties I just don't think will work without a big overhaul. And I think that it's mostly just being honest with the audience, like, from the get-go. And kind of going, look, we're not going to be moving around as much. Like, this is the thing. But we'll have the same characters, you know, we'll have a version of the story.
Right.
Instead of just kind of acting like, well, we're going to get on the road. It's like, you're not, though, are you? And that's okay. Like, you can do interesting things without that. Although, speaking of getting on the road, and you'll like this, getting on the road and changing up location and being brave. I'm thinking that there are TV shows that have done it. Weeds, for instance, every season.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
And that eventually, you know.
Was it every season? Or I think it was like
after season two. Two or maybe.
Oh, okay.
Well, it was. They changed the premise every season, but they didn't change locations until after season three, I think.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
Unlike
The Good Place, which appears to blow up its own premise every single episode.
Right. And of course, now it feels like we're done with this, like that location.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is where I was going with that.
I stepped on your segue.
No. You're fine. I rambled around it. Let me tell you. I was just like, I'm going to go for a Sunday drive. But yeah, Good Place seems to have just been like, well, we're done here. Let's move on. And it's like, okay, you have three episodes left in the season. So they on the one hand, it's like, you can't, it's that thing about The Good Place. Like, I could see how you could cram, because God knows they can work fast. all the way through the storyline that they're setting up for the rest of right now for the rest of the show. You know, which again, in Good Place terms, means like 10 minutes. They could burn through a lot of that. On the other hand, I could also see how you could happily go, well, we're going to get to point X, and then next season will happen, and we'll still have this. But that doesn't feel like this show at all. Like, they wouldn't. This is not a show I ever trust to go, well, here's our roadmap, and we're going to do that. It's like, yeah, nice try. you're going to do that for like 5 minutes.
Yahoo!
Oh, yep. This show is so good.
It is.
Also, I can segue away from The Good Place into something else if you'd like.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd like to come back to The Good Place
No, we can stay in The Good Place for a while. I'll have this keyed up in my head. So, you know, let's stay in The Good Place for a little bit.
Okay. I liked the episode.
Did you?
that's my highfalutin critical analysis of the latest Good Place. I'm just amazed by its ability to constantly upset the status quo in one way or another, and yet remain as like entertaining and clever as always.
It remains that Michael Shore kind of, here's a group of people in a workplace comedy that slowly become family, and it's the weirdest workplace comedy it is.
Yes.
I mean, the first season, a lot of it wasn't so much workplace in the same sense that we could figure it out, but the second season really has been. They're all working toward a common goal, right? So, right. And the first season, you think they're all working toward a common goal.
Exactly.
So it is this weird kind of workplace comedy that is what Michael Shore does, except so very strange.
Oh, I have a different tack on The Good Place, and this is a personal relationship thing.
Okay.
I have a friend in the city of Saskatoon, which is not too far from me, farther away for you, and he's recently started dating this girl. Now, he hasn't dated anybody for a while. Uh-huh. And it seems to be going really well. And he actually works in the same place with her. So, you know, you don't want them to break up because it would be awkward. Now, we met over the Christmas holidays, and she seems really nice. But at one point, they were trading jokes from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which they've been, like, burning through on Netflix. And I said, oh, if you like Michael Shore comedies, you will love the Good Place. And he said, oh, I haven't seen it. And I said, it is a fantastic show. And she said, it's all right. So my question is, should he, like, dump her and have it be awkward in the workplace? Or should he move to a different city overnight? Because I don't know which is better.
Some things just don't connect with people for whatever reason.
I know. Yeah.
I got nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I understand if like... I mean, I don't have many sort of media consumption relationship deal breakers.
Right.
But I think not liking The Good Place would be a solid indication that your sensibility was quite different.
Can I just say, I don't, as much as I've been loving the show, I don't know if they're going to top, not this last episode, but the episode before, there was just a small moment that might be my favorite thing ever. Because I actually ended up, I don't remember why, but like rewatching the last episode before this one.
Which one? I remember the last one.
That was the roast and the whole thing.
Oh my god, yes.
And it's in the roast where Michael's like, says something, and, you know, and Jason just comes back with, like, something just very Jason. And just Michael stops and goes, Jason Mendoza! Like, it was just so perfectly timed. Like, because the entire cast is so good and so strong, and they're just so on point, that it's occasionally easy to forget and just lose yourself in the moment, that these are all people who have such incredible control over timing.
Oh, yes.
That, like, even things that feel like just offhand and out of the blue just work. And things like that were just, I don't know why, but like the timing on that bit is so precise. Like, he doesn't step on the beat. He doesn't let it linger. Like, it's just, it feels so completely natural.
Yeah. And it's clearly not edited to.
Right.
I know that bit, like, because it's not edited to, like, to feel that way. It's part of, like, I mean, partly it is, but I mean, it's also just really great comic timing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, I found the roast part of that episode really fascinating, partly because you, at that point, you weren't quite sure whether Michael had, like, was playing, like, yet another long con on them or not, although I was pretty sure he wasn't. But it was the fact that, like the denizens of the bad place, if nothing else, have the shittiest sense of humor.
Right.
And there's something about that that seems, like, weirdly profound. Like, that's what evil is. Like, really crappy humor.
Yeah.
On top of everything else, the jokes are bad, too.
Right. Like, their sense of music is terrible. Like, that's the whole thing, right?
But I like the fact that the only songs in their part in the party were, like, Puddle of Mud, She Hate Me, and Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. And for the finale, played, like, overlapping.
Yeah.
That was pretty great.
I've actually been joking that I want to paint our back fence white and just put big green letters, you know, welcome. Everything is going to be fine.
Everything is going great. Yes. I like that. I would like to see that personally.
So you ready for my segue from The Good Place?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Speaking of The Good Place...
Yeah.
Oh, good segue. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I saw a movie this weekend that also had Mark Evan Jackson.
Really?
Yeah.
And that movie was?
Jumanji. And, you know, let me tell you, going to Jumanji, ooh, I did not expect to see Mark Evan Jackson, right? Who I feel like, and this is, I was talking about this with a friend the other day, like, it feels like he's suddenly everywhere, and I do credit Michael Schur with that. Like, he shows up on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and he does that the deadpan thing right next to Andre Brower and can prove that, like, he can do this hysterically, like, and precise, and then suddenly everyone's like, oh, shit, let's just hire this guy. Like...
Yeah. I always feel he's, like, kind of... He sort of came up, like, with some, like, Apatow comedies as well. I could be wrong on that. But,
he did, but I don't think he really got the chance to shine for longer than, like, a minute, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And again, he's in very, very little of it, so... he plays
he's
the principal.
He's been around for a... that's cool.
But yeah, I did see the new Jumanji movie.
And was it everything that the trailers and hype had been promising?
It pretty much is exactly what the trailers make you think it is.
See,
it has some issues in that, like, they have this teenage cast who, okay, the script is not the greatest script in the world.
Okay.
Let's be clear here. And you can tell because the kids who kind of bookend the film, right? Because it's a bunch of kids who all end up in detention together. And are like, what's this? And they're playing, like, this video game. And then it's sucked into the video game, which is Jumanji. Because we see the board game, like, transform itself into a video game.
I get you.
And so the kids really just bookend it, right? Because most of the movie is in Jumanji and they're not there. Because they're in the bodies of these other people. So they're just bookending it. And they don't get much screen time. But they are not as good at delivering some of these lines that aren't great. And you could feel the script trying to be like, well, let's do this thing. Like, let's do kind of like a high school kind of John Hughes type of thing with these kids who are okay, but they're not going to really shine. And then when you're in the actual, you know, in Jumanji, in the bad place, which is what my brain tried to say, when you're in Jumanji itself, of course, you have, you know, Dwayne Johnson, you have, you know,
right, Gillen
and Jack
and
Black, and right.
Yeah.
And so they can take this kind of decent-ish dialogue and elevate it, because that's what they do.
Is Martin Freeman in this one?
No.
Oh, it seems like a movie where Martin Freeman would show up.
There is a character who could have been played by Martin Freeman, but wasn't.
Oh, see, there you go.
I wouldn't have blinked if it had been Martin Freeman. Like, it's a very kind of like just generic kind of Martin Freeman role. They have a lot of fun with some of the tropes of video games. And there are some that don't work at all for the way they want to make fun of them, which is kind of interesting.
Right.
The big one being Gillen's outfit.
Right, like her Lara Croft Tomb Raider-y
sort
of outfit. Right,
and they kind of mention it once with her, like, you know, who wears this in the jungle? And you could, like, it's very obviously one of these, like, oh, look at this, except that there were things like, you know, other movies that would dress her the same without doing it, and they don't really deal with it past going like, oh, look at this, ha ha, and then it's just her outfit. I'm just like, you can't. This is you wanted to dress her that way for sales, and then you wanted to be like, but we didn't want to do it. We had to. No, you really didn't.
Right. I mean, I saw that line in the trailer, and I'm like, okay.
It didn't really work. But like, there were a bunch of NPCs. So like, people who first met by the character who could be played by Martin Freeman, you know, who has like this Jeep, and he's like, get in. And he's like, you know, welcome, whatever the character's name is supposed to be, right?
Right.
Like, you know, I'm so excited to meet you. Da-da-da-da. And then like someone else in the van speaks. He's like, well, what are we even doing? He's like, welcome, whatever. And then like introduces them.
Oh, like, nice.
And then like, but that's all he could say. And like they'll ask questions, and he'll just repeat certain things because that's the only dialogue he has loaded. And there are a few other like NPCs like that who could only say like one thing. Which is that
adventure,
great frustration.
Waiting around the corner.
Yeah, it's kind of perfect for that.
Yes. Why, it sounds like a novel you wrote once.
Yeah.
Literally does, Steve. Yes.
Right.
Which, yeah.
So it has some fun with it. It, in terms of, like, generic action movie video game-based thing in the jungle, they have fun with that. You know, there's like, the ongoing, like, oh, this character has, like, this stupid weakness, or, you know, weird bullshit and interpersonal drama of they don't really like each other much at first.
Right, right.
But, like, there are still some fun bits, because, like, it's obviously, like, this the nerd becomes, you know, Dwayne Johnson. And he's, like, big into video games. You see him at home earlier playing video games, where he's, like, talking himself through it, where he's, like, you know, okay, block, block, upper punch, he's saying it. So, like, the first big, like, fight scene where he's the Rock, and he's like, okay, I'll take these guys out. And he starts saying, like, block, block, dodge. And it becomes really funny, because it's completely unnecessary. But it's just funny.
You know where else they've done that? I watched the Hulu series Future Man, Eliza Coop and
I watched
Josh
like one
Hutcherson.
Episode of that and then stopped.
Yeah, I watched all of the episodes and stopped. I don't know what to say, but I will watch dumb stuff. It actually gets better as it goes on. Yeah, they sort of, yeah, it seems pretty obvious to start with, and then it sort of develops into something a little more interesting. And they go off on weird directions frequently, and they make good use of the time travel motif in ways that I didn't expect them to. Anyway, but it's also like an annoyingly puerile, like Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg comedy.
Right.
So it's a lot of things. But anyway, at one point, like the two video game characters who turn out to be people from the future. And they only do this occasionally, and I can understand why, but every so often when they get in fights, they actually sort of like shout out their moves.
Yeah,
like,
I caught it like the first episode. I was like, okay, that's cute. Like, yeah.
And, but it's a similar deal. And it gets funnier in other situations because the moves get more and more absurd. Like they get just so elaborate, like stupidly elaborate video game finishing moves, and so they're like reeling off this list of things. They don't do it as much as I would like. Actually, I wanted them to push it further, but you know.
That's
anyway,
fair.
So that's a similar thing. But they're
star,
not Dwayne Johnson, so.
The star moment though in the movie, like the single funniest thing they do, is, you know, the teenage girl who becomes Karen Gillan. Is like the shy, nerdy little teenage girl, right?
Right.
And, of course, there's, like, the popular girl who becomes Jack Black. And so they're like, well, there's these guards, we have to distract them. And she's like, oh, you just flirt with them. She's like, I can't do that. And so it's like, I'll teach you how to flirt. And the teaching you how to flirt thing is kind of funny. You're like, okay, this is kind of funny watching Karen Gillan, like, just be really weirdly awkward for a minute. But then they go into the actual flirting scene, and it is one of the most hysterical things you've ever seen. Like, just Karen Gillan just flexing the comedy muscle so hard.
Sweet.
It is priceless. That was
and you
just
think
so
the star
well
moment
done.
Oh, nice. You think the star moment would come from, you know, the other cast members, frankly.
Well, Kevin Hart gets a lot to do. Dwayne Johnson, of course, it's fucking Rock, right? Like, you know that he's going to be really personable and have a lot of fun with it, and you're going to love, like, one of his abilities is, and it, like, I forget what the hell they, like, smolder intensely.
That's
and so, like,
funny.
Every now and then he just does this, you know, he does, like, that Rock thing, and it's, like, the smolder intensely, and people just react to it like this kind of, like, a bit of a swoon. It's just, it's really funny. But just that little bit with Gillen just flirting badly and, like, you know, like, oh, like, bite your, you know, like, bite your lip, and she looked just like a squirrel. It's just, it's amazing.
Oh, this sounds like a worth a watch.
And, like,
I think I might wait for
the... She walks up to them to try to do, like, this, you know, like, the sexy strut, and the other characters are watching it, and they're like, what's wrong? Did she hurt her leg? Like...
Cool.
So it has a lot of fun moments. I think my favorite bit, though, in the film has nothing to do with the movie.
Oh.
But sitting... They had it in a small theater. It's been out for a while. And sitting in this corner next to me, like a seat away, were these two stoners. And I can tell you that they were two stoner kids. Because... Now, I mean, they packed a fucking lunch. And again, as someone who grew up, you know, like, in New York, when you, like, you really, like, couldn't bring anything, like, they would, like, you know, be on you. And I have seen some epic things go on there where it's like, you know, we've all snuck shit in, right?
Right.
Like, you know, I once helped a friend, like, sneak in, like, Chinese. Like, this was a thing. The all-time winner was the guy who pulled an entire fucking pizza out of a bag. And, like, rock the fuck on. But, like, these two, you know, like, they pulled out, like, a 2-liter fucking bottle of soda and, like, some cups.
Wow.
They had, like, burgers. They had a fucking meal set up, right?
Right.
That's fine. So the trailer for Rampage comes on.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
And they start, like, excitedly going, like, how much they want to see this. And I'm like, all right, fine, whatever. They're just, you know, kids. Like, I get it. Like, they're the audience for this, right? Fine, whatever. It'd be cool. And then they're like, you know, they show the release date, which is April 20th. They're like, 420, man, that's fucking perfect. Yeah!
Oh, my God. Yes.
And the entire movie, like, they were kind of chatting away, like, not to the level of being distracting so much as just, like, you know, I could have tuned it out a little more than I did just because I was laughing listening to them. Just hysterically just comment on the movie with not, like, you know, oh, look at this, but just, like, laughing, just being like, oh, man, and just, it was really fucking funny. It enhanced my experience. Although I did feel a little bad because I realized, you know, got tickets for it and didn't think about it for Friday. And get to the theater and realize that the Proud Mary's opening weekend and that I should have watched Proud Mary.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen any reviews or anything for that yet.
They've been burying that film, and the studio seems to be burying it for reasons that no one understands. Like, again, there are people who like, theaters had advertised, like, 7 and 10 p.m. showings on Thursday, and then people were showing up for showings, apparently, somewhere, and were being told that the studio said they can't air it till midnight.
What?
And they're turning people away.
What?
Yeah, it really does start to feel like they killed all advertising for it. Like, it feels like they're trying to bury it, not because it's bad, because apparently it's not bad at all.
Yeah, and I didn't even know it existed until a couple of weeks ago.
That's the thing, is that for some reason they're trying to bury this and no one can figure out what's going on. Except for the obvious, Hollywood is afraid of, like, a black female action star who's not 20.
And it was crazy because it was on, like, in front of a YouTube video, and I watched it. And I'm like, holy crap! Like, a Taraji P. Henson, like, action vehicle. It must be coming out in what, May, June? I'm like, 2 weeks from now. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, just way to market this one, Sony.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, but I think it sounds to me like some dipshit executive basically looked at it and went, oh, that's Taraji P. Henson, she's an adult black woman. She can't, you know, she can't carry a film, but I guess we gotta throw this in theaters and just fuck the marketing budget for it, I guess.
Before Fury Road really hit, remember the original marketing was all about everyone but Charlize Theron.
Everyone but the main character.
Well, it was just like Tom Hardy. Look, it's Tom Hardy. Hey, look, Tom Hardy. And then the movie came out, and everyone's like, Tom who? Who cares? And then they switched it up. So, you know, I mean, like, you got that feeling that, like, if that hadn't happened, they wouldn't have pushed Atomic Blonde. But even Atomic Blonde, they didn't really push hard.
Not very hard, no.
So, yeah, we all kind of do know exactly what's happening here, and it's terrible.
Yeah.
But again, I do want to go see it.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I you know, when my foot is better, I will go see it.
And I mean, frankly, I've been kind of waiting for your foot.
I've been kind of waiting. And it's just a little bit swollen, so like wearing shoes hurts.
Oh, you injured your foot.
Yeah, just you know, shit happens. But it's just like I'm just like waiting for it to be better. So it's like wearing shoes doesn't hurt for long periods of time, and I'm like, then I can go see a movie again.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think I mean, I've kind of been waiting for like a Hansen action flick since Person of Interest,
right.
Frankly.
That's the thing. I think that's what we all been like, just, yes.
Yeah. Probably. I think even the creators, Jonah, Nolan, pretty much said, you know, we didn't serve that character as well as we could have.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and again, Person of Interest, they had a lot going on, and
that's true.
As they figured out their bigger focus, I understand, and they did kind of drop the ball there, but
yeah.
But, anyway, so yeah, no, that's out and looks good.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of Person of Interest.
Yeah.
See, I can segue too. I finished my nostalgic rewatch of Life, the Damian Lewis and Sarah Shahi series from, I think it was 2008, 2009. And just, it's a weird thing to watch because there is a particular style of television that sort of exists between, and I like to harp on this, between sort of like, you know, streaming peak TV and like just straight up network television that you could pin to say maybe a shift that happened around maybe Veronica Mars came out. And then,
I think it shifted around Lost for good.
Yeah, definitely Lost. Lost was the big change.
And as you pointed out years back to me before I even watched it, the Person of Interest embodies the moment of shift.
Yes.
Yeah.
Perfectly impressive. And Fringe, I think, to a certain extent as well. But Person of Interest more so in some ways. But yeah, Life is one of these shows that sort of seems to have washed up after Lost, but it's very much got like the noir vibe of Veronica Mars and Terriers, actually. Like, this has like Donald Logue in it. It feels, and some of the cast from Terriers are also in Life, like his sidekick, Raymond James, what's his face, is in it. Rachel Miner plays a character in Life.
Nice.
Like, so you can see like there's a, like, you've got this similar vibe, similar cast, and like even the music and sort of the sensibility seems quite similar, and it's just, and I just feel that Life kind of got, it just kind of got lost in this wash, and it's a real shame because it's still outdated in some ways, but man, is it, it's just like such a pleasure to watch.
Yeah, it's always good though. There's so many shows that it's so easy to get something lost if you're not careful.
Yeah.
Even if you are careful, hell, you know, shit gets confused.
That's true. So. And it makes great use of Damian Lewis's charisma.
Nice.
Which he kind of squanders in Homeland after a bit. So this is more enjoyable.
Well, that's very cool. As I yawn. Sorry about that.
Tell me more about your media consumption habits.
Yeah. Yeah, keep interesting me. oh, fuck. Yeah, I don't know. I like I said, I'm still I don't know, overworked isn't the issue. I just lost at a bunch of projects. Still work on this novel, which is, I think I mentioned, is writing slow and fast at the same time.
Right.
Which is frustrating. But I really do like it. So I think it's doing good work. It's just I have a deadline and, you know, I have, like, some comic stuff I have to write up and editing gigs and all that. So I've been a little bit slowed down on shit.
Yeah,
and, of course, this coming week, God knows when this goes up, but this coming week for us, everything comes back on the CW, except for Legends.
Oh, that's right. Except for Legends, which I think is mid-February or something
weird
like that.
Yeah, it's
like
there's, like, four episodes of Supergirl, and then Legends takes the Supergirl slot. And then right around when Legends takes the Supergirl slot, iZombie comes on behind it.
Oh, that's
taking
right.
Taking Valor, I think it's the show. Valor slot.
I don't know anything about Valor.
No one does. I don't think people make this show know what it is.
All right then.
The only funny thing about Valor to me is in the 90s, in DC Comics, the character Mon-El, whose real name was Largand.
Right.
And his superhero name was Mon-El, as kind of a tribute to Superman. Because in the future, everyone knew Superman was Kal-El and all this shit. In the Supergirl show, of course, he is just Mon-El, and his father's name is Largand. Makes no sense to me. Fine, whatever.
Yeah.
But in the 90s, they rebranded him. Instead of calling him Mon-El to give him his own series, they called him Valor.
Oh.
So it keeps making me, like, I'm like, oh, right after Supergirl, it's Valor. I'm like, are they giving Mon-El his own show? And it confused the hell out of me for a minute.
Fair enough. Yeah, that
yeah, like
that
me and six
sense.
Other people were confused. But anyway.
Are they bringing Constantine onto Arrow anytime soon?
Legends.
That's
when
really
Legends
odd.
Comes back, there's a Constantine
oh,
episode.
Oh, Legends. See, that I would...
He was in
yeah.
the end bump of the last Legends episode.
Okay. Oh, I must be behind on Legends.
Yeah.
Then. Man,
it's the episode right after the crossover.
Okay, I have not seen that one.
It's a decent
Do you know,
episode.
I was... I got together with a friend of mine over the holiday break.
Yes.
And she lives in Vancouver, and she works in the television industry there. She does costuming.
Everyone in Vancouver works in television. I'm convinced. There's so much TV being made there, I can't imagine anyone doesn't at this point.
Exactly. And she was trying to explain, you know, the shows she worked on, and she said, I worked on this one set of shows, and she said, I know you aren't interested in this at all, but it's like this great big crossover thing. I'm like, oh, you know, Crisis on Earth X. She's like, yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, that was great. Yeah, and she told me all about the various folk.
Yeah.
Because I was just a complete, as they say, a star fucker, and I just asked him, how was so and so? How was so and so?
Nice.
Apparently, Tom Cavanaugh leaves like crap everywhere.
I could see it.
And she says that is like. She says he's nice, but he just leaves shit everywhere, and everybody has to pick up after him. So,
it's weird. Like the more I like have seen interviews with Kavanaugh, the more I feel like Ed was just him. And I'm okay with this. Like,
fair enough.
I get it. But you know, and Black Lightning starts this week.
It does.
Very
it
excited
really
about Black
does.
Lightning.
I know that's gonna be fun. I have high hopes for Black Lightning.
Yeah, I mean it's been apparently like all the people who've seen previews and all this, and it's just been phenomenal. So yeah. Hopefully that takes off.
And we needed an African American superhero with electricity powers on TV. So
the static show wasn't happening, so they went back to Black Lightning. No, I think they have a very interesting story with Black Lightning there, and they're gonna bring in, you know, his daughter who has powers as thunder and.
Yeah.
They're That's shooting not, in Atlanta, yeah, which is the new thing. If you didn't know, the reason everyone's shooting is Atlanta has been, you know, was offering a whole lot of really cheap deals to film.
Oh, yeah, they're
for
probably,
a couple of years
their tax
now,
credit is probably great, yeah.
Because New York became a problem, but people already set up for the East Coast, so they can get down to Atlanta easily.
Oh, okay.
So it became the new thing, which is why, like, you know, everything is being shot in Atlanta these days.
Yeah, actually, that's the other thing I always think when watching Person of Interest. I'm like, man, they shoot a lot of this in New York City. How freaking expensive must this show be to shoot? Because I know that I mean, New York is not the cheapest place to shoot a film or a
sure.
TV show.
I mean, a lot of the areas yeah. they used, to be fair, a lot of the areas they used for exteriors in Person of Interest were either outer borough, like not Manhattan, which gets way cheaper.
Oh, okay.
Or they
Great.
Use way uptown or way downtown, which are, again, way cheaper.
Oh, okay.
If you go up to, like, you know, 122nd or so, it gets a little cheaper. If you go all the way downtown, it gets a little cheaper. And part of that is a bunch of that land is owned by either NYU or Columbia. Weird New York fact. The Catholic Church owns the most land in New York still.
Of course.
But right behind them is NYU, and right behind them is Columbia. So, they charge for it, but they can charge a little bit less. You go to Midtown, and you get weirdness.
Fair enough. I've always wondered, actually, where exactly they shot, so that's...
Yeah,
yeah,
a lot of their stuff is uptown, or downtown, or, like, out in, like, Queens and Brooklyn. Some of the stuff is in the Bronx, actually.
And they never did a single Law and Order crossover episode.
No. But, I mean, and that's part of why also a lot of that stuff downtown is cheaper, because Law and Order always shot down there.
Yes.
So there's kind of the established, like, can we keep doing this? Because we already have, you know, it's cheaper. Mm. That Dennis Leary firefighter show. Always shot up like 122nd early Harlem.
Okay. I haven't seen a single episode of that.
Mm. I watched like a season or so of it back in the day, like the first season or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of these shows that, like, you could see what it wanted to be. And you could see how they weren't actually doing it. And you kind of wish them well somewhere else. You know what I mean? Like, I hope you guys figure this out. Don't bother letting me know. But for your sake, I hope you figure this out.
Best of luck. Best of luck in all your future endeavors. Fair enough. Yeah, I've always sort of been on the... It's just one of those things where, like, as you say, like, you know, so much television, so little
right.
time.
I do wonder, weird little bit for you. I've always wondered if they shot Uptown where they did, like on 22nd or so, on the west side. Partially because Leary used to at least live up in the 90s on the west side.
Oh, okay.
I had a friend who worked at a Starbucks up there, like 92nd or so. And so it's like, you know, Dennis Leary comes in for coffee. And yep. So I'm like, did they just shoot, like, so he could be walking distance from his set? Because that's great. Like, it was his show, so maybe he just built it that way. Be like, we'll just do it here. Shut up. It's fine. Don't worry about it. I don't know. But, yeah, no, shooting in New York is getting worse again. I mean, it's a hard time. Street closures are not cheap.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's the infamous Leverage thing, of course. Where they shot their first season in L.A. And then moved to Boston. Because L.A. was too expensive to shoot in. And Boston was Portland.
Oh. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. No, they used Portland. And it became funny because there's an episode in the Boston years where they actually go to Portland. And so they have to shoot different parts of the city.
Huh.
Because they can't use any of the bits they usually use for Boston. And a bunch of Portland, actually, like, there's bits of Portland out here that look like Queens, weirdly, like, around Forest Hills. And there are bits that, having lived in both places, that very much look like Boston. I can get behind it. But then, of course, they famously moved the show to Portland. And admit that they're in Portland. But again, they had to stop using a bunch of the places they used when they were shooting in Boston. Quote-unquote Boston. Because they've been tagging those as Boston. Shut up.
Right. Fair enough.
My favorite thing, though, was always with Leverage, was that anytime they use an airport, they used the Portland Convention Center. Because they didn't want to shoot in an actual airport. Because of security concerns. But also, Portland has that famous fucking rug in the airport.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, you can't shoot in the Portland airport, so they shoot in the Convention Center, which is where, like, Rose City Comic Con happens. And every year we're like, yeah, let's go to the convention, go down to the airport. And, but they don't do any, like, they don't really, they just change a little bit of signs. So it's really funny watching them, like, leave the airport and here's, like, and right here is this, like, street. I'm like, what? That's not how airports work. Like, just the interiors always look weird because it's not fucking airport. And right. It makes me laugh really hard because the convention center doubled for, like, 17 different airports over the life of that series.
Wow.
Just by using slightly different halls.
Back when I produced the documentary series, we did reenactments. I mean, we always had to, like, get creative as much as possible with our reenactments for locations. Because, I mean, we couldn't be traveling around too much.
Right.
Like, we could travel, like, around for interviews when it was just, you know, a unit director / interviewer and a camera guy. But when you're doing reenactments, you have to create them at home. But, I mean, our budget was so low that per episode, like the producer, I mean, which was me after a while, would literally give the set deck and props and locations people like a couple $100 each and say, work some magic.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is that sometimes we would cheat. I mean, this was before I was working on the show, but we were doing a one on the Halifax Harbor explosion,
right.
1919. And we had to get a shot of the script kind of called for a shot of the Halifax Harbor, like a modern day shot, and we didn't have one. For some reason, we'd been out there, but we didn't get a shot of the harbor. So they subbed in a shot, like, I think, like in Toronto, like, of, you know, it was like Ontario. And they said, well, this looks pretty anonymous. And it lasted maybe a second. And they got so many calls. Like, from everybody who looked at that, I was like, nope. And they were like, it's anonymous. It, like, it doesn't look like anything. And I watched the episode, and I was like, are you kidding me? That is no way that's Halifax Harbor.
Right.
I mean, if you're not from there, like, you'd think that a harbor is a harbor, water is water. But it's just, like, immediately you look, and if you know the place, you're like, no, not on the best day.
Leveraging their treatment of Boston. Like, there's a bunch of it that you're like, okay, maybe. But whenever they went to the waterfront, the Boston waterfront does not look like the Portland waterfront. It doesn't. And they were having to choose angles that didn't have a bridge in them. which we have a bunch of bridges out here, but it's just, again, the waterfront just looks different. And having lived in both places, like, this isn't how this is. And
yeah, and it's, and I mean, as you, so you know, it's not just a matter of, like, what landmarks are in the frame. It also just goes just straight to, like, what does this place just intangibly look like?
Right.
Like, what sort of like distant trees, what kind of color of the water, what kind of atmosphere, you know?
And I mean, and of like course they did the thing of, like, they had a bunch of like airplane shots of Boston, so they'd just be like, look, see, we're in Boston, and then you'd kind of zoom into, like, a street, you'd be like, well, okay, we're in Boston, because they've shown you, like, landmarks in Boston for a second, just to try to get your head into the space. So it was just always interesting. Like I said, like that first episode where they're like, oh, we're going to Portland. They made sure to be like, see, and here's these characters walking across this bridge. Here's this bit of Portland that you know is Portland. And it was funny, it's like they kept, like, they at one point have them in a hotel. And so they're like, it's this big thunderstorm. It's like, it's Portland. It rains a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Funny thing, we don't actually get thunderstorms here. Almost ever. Like, thunder is really rare in Portland.
Interesting.
Well, it's because, you know, thunder, lightning, all that comes as storms pick up a charge, and most of the storms start here and then travel across the country, so that by the time they get to the middle of the country, they've built up a charge, but over here they don't have much of one. Yeah. So we don't get big thunderstorms here very often. But they're like, you know, people know Portland for, like, rain, so let's just throw in, like, a big thunderstorm so they'll know it's raining. See, that's Portland. And I'm like, that actually sounds like a storm in Boston. Like, you guys are just backwards. But again, if you haven't lived in both places or either one, the chances of getting it are slim.
Yeah.
You know, if you have, then it's just, like, except for me, like, living in both places, it just becomes a hysterical game, which is, again, why I always refer to, and a few of my friends, like, we always refer to the convention center as the airport. Not to anyone who we don't know is in on the joke, because that would be confusing and mean, but, like, we're going to the airport. The convention's at the airport? No, it's at the convention center. Then why are you saying the airport? So just watch this 5 seasons of TV and catch up. And just, no, we're not doing that.
That's right. If you're going to hang with us, you need the following media.
Try not to do that to people. Oh, man. But yeah, so, you know, like next week, like, we'll have all our shows back. We'll be talking about all this bullshit.
By the by, if you have time on Netflix anytime soon, I recommend The End of the Fucking World.
Oh, I have a Netflix recommendation for you. Tell me about The End of the Fucking World. I haven't seen it.
It's based on a graphic novel. I don't know who.
Oh, that's right. It is, isn't it? God, I know this too.
It's a British. I believe it's a British graphic novel, and yeah, the show is it's 8 episodes broken up into
Charles Forsman.
There we go, and broken up into almost arbitrary half hour chunks. But that's just fine. It means everything just goes and it just flows quite smoothly, and it's just the sensibility is fantastic with these two sort of hilariously disaffected youth kind of they run away in the first episode.
They
steal a trick from the runaways and they just run the fuck away, like the son the boy just punches his dad in the face and steals his car.
Nice.
Yeah, And off they go. And I honestly don't want to spoil anything. A, because I haven't finished it yet.
Sure.
But B, because it's I think it's actually worth one's time.
Well, I have a Netflix recommendation for you.
Oh.
4 episodes of the 8 are out already. And I think I remember what the other 4 are going to be. At least 2 or 3 of them. It's a documentary called The Toys That Made Us.
Oh, I haven't watched it, but it's been popping up in my recommended list.
Yeah, it is the first 4 episodes are out, and the 4 are, I'm trying to remember now what they are, excuse me, Star Wars, Barbie, He-Man, and G.I. Joe, I believe in that order, actually. And it's, like, they're going to be doing Star Trek, I forget what the, Star Trek, Lego, Transformers, and Hello Kitty are the other 4 that aren't done yet. And it is, honest to God, fascinating, because this is not what I worried it would be, is a lot of these, like, toy documentary, you know, like, here's this documentary about, you know, like, G.I. Joe, and it's all, I don't know, like, celebrities being like, I played with G.I. Joes, and that's what got me into acting, you know, whatever it is, which, God help us if that's true, for anyone on Earth. But, like, it isn't focused on that aspect, it's actually the creation and talking to the people who designed the toys and built the toys and, you know, made all this stuff work. And, like, the weird struggles in the companies and, like, how bizarre choices were made on the fly.
Yeah. Okay, this sounds interesting.
Like, one of my favorite little, like, notes is actually in the G.I. Joe one. And, again, all 4 episodes of the first one are fantastic. Like, I didn't realize that Barbie was originally based off of, I want to say, Swedish? I'm probably wrong on Swedish. But like a Swedish doll that was like based off of a cartoon prostitute that like men used to give women the doll to be like, this is what I expect. Like,
weird.
Yeah, no, it, like there's a lot of weird shit like that. But no, one of my favorite things is that when they were doing G.I. Joe, because you know, G.I. Joe of course started as those big figures, and after Star Wars, you know, G.I. Joe was like failing. And they decided to reinvent it smaller because it was cheaper and build in more of a story so it wasn't just like this generic figure, but do all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you went into like how the Marvel Comics deal and why the Marvel Comics deal was so important for it. Like why there were comics that early.
Interesting.
And it really, this one I actually knew for years now, was the reason they partnered with Marvel very quickly was because you could only do so many seconds, like there's a percentage of your ad for toys that could be like animation, stuff like that. Always had to show the actual toys being played with. Because you had to, you know, actually show the actual toy because of lawsuits. And that's how it worked for toy companies, right? There was no such legislation in place for ads for comic books. So they're like, they want to partner with Marvel, and their deal was like, we'll advertise your comic book. And this way we can use all the art from the comic and do way cooler ads and you get all this money because it'll sell the comics.
Huh.
Mm. But Larry Hama, who was like the first writer on G.I. Joe, also one of those fact file sheets on the back of the thing, because he was writing them for himself originally, because these characters had nothing other than a name. And so he had to invent a lot of that world. And like, you know, Cobra as a bad guy came out of Marvel. And so, like, all those little character sheets and all, like, the Marvel's coming up with the backstories and, like, who these characters were. But when they were first making, like, the first, like, 8-10 figures, they had this thing that they had to reduce the amount of applications, like, in terms of paint and all that, because it costs money, by, like, 10%. And they're like, we could make all the characters look 10% worse, but that's a problem for us, right? Because they'd look cheap.
Right.
There's an or. We can just say, fuck it, and pull all the paint off of one figure.
Oh.
Which is how Snake Eyes happened.
Oh.
And the joke is, like, no one thought, like, then he's going to become the biggest figure ever, and he's, like, the cheapest to make. But that's why Snake Eyes was, like, this, like, all black, because it's just raw plastic.
Huh.
Yeah. So this document has, like, really interesting things like that, and there's, like, sniping, and there's, like, you know, people who take credit for He-Man. It's like 2 or 3 different people who all did He-Man, who all take individual, like, personal full credit. It's fascinating stuff like that. And it really does get into, like, more the interesting behind-the-scenes company stuff rather than, like, here's this guy who just collects G.I. Joes and what they mean to him. Like, that's fine. There is some of that, but the focus really is on the companies and the designers.
That's a lot more interesting.
And, like, just getting in deep with the designers. Yeah, no, they're fast, and they're all run, like, 45 to 55 minutes an episode.
Okay. Oh, this is great. I mean, I honestly probably would not have watched this series otherwise, so... So
no,
thank,
I said there are only four
that.
Of them right now. The other four are coming. You know, I know that, like, for Transformers and Hello Kitty, they did travel to Japan to talk to, you know, the original designers. They want to do more if they get... It's funny, because they think of it as the first eight were their first season, but because they didn't finish, basically their first season is four. And so there's a little bit of confusion there, but they want to do more episodes eventually if Netflix lets them. The problem is because, you know, how do you do an hour on, like... Thundercats, because isn't that just, well, we saw He-Man and we were like, we should do that. And they're like, but how? It's like, I don't know, let's make them all fucking cat people. And, like, you know that that's pretty much all Thundercats is, right?
Yeah.
Right, so then, like, what are they going to do? Like, an episode on Silverhawks? Because guess what that is? And it's like, there is a diminishing return, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm kind of curious how they're going to do the Star Trek one, because I don't even remember that many Star Trek toys.
Yeah. Neither do I. I mean, the Star Wars toys are... I mean, I think maybe...
Oh, that one
is
amazing. The Star Wars one is amazing, if only for... When you get to it, how Hasbro lost the license.
Oh, okay.
It is the most amazing bit of... You just fucked yourself so hard. Like, it really was. Like, it was the company's... Because, like, they got bought by Mattel.
Oh, right. Okay.
And when Mattel had the license, they fucked it up. And it was just like, all they had to do was this one thing, and they fucked it up. And it really just like this heartbreaking, like, how many millions of dollars did you just piss away? Because you were dumb. Like, there's no excuse. Like, I'm like, how many people had to have lost their job? They don't really touch on that. Like, and then we all got fired. But you could feel it had to have happened.
Right. Oh, Jesus.
But yeah, there's like, there's it's really kind of fascinating for that sort of thing. And again, just the whole history of, like, you know, of some of these companies. We're just like, I never knew this about Hasbro, or, you know, why they started to do this, or... So...
I just remember the design of some of those, like, especially the action figures, like, in all the Star Wars, like, the little hexagonal holes in the bottom of their feet, so you could put them on pegs. And, like, and the little sort of the lightsabers in their hands, which were actually, you just sort of like push the little sort of like little sort of like, I don't know what the word for it is. I want to say nodule, but it's not a nodule. Little nub, like a little slider down.
Little,
and just
the little
to come out of their
lever, yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny because I got a really cheap ass fountain pen in the mail the other day, which I did not recall ordering. Thank you, late night Amazon. And it came with this little sort of method for injecting silicone grease around the O-rings.
Right.
And I just realized that the little mechanism for, like, pushing the grease out of the tube is the exact same mechanism that was in, like, Luke Skywalker's hand.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like arm. It's all the time.
I was like, oh, my God. Yeah. I just love that. I was just like, oh, jeez.
But it's funny to remember, like, the Star Wars was, like, the first, like, 3.25-inch action figures.
Huh, that's right.
And because it makes them cheaper.
Yeah.
And, for them, actually, it wasn't even that they made it cheaper. It was because they wanted to make the vehicles. Because they make way more money off of the vehicles. But the vehicles have to be to scale. And if you do these big, like, 12-inch figures, holy shit, these vehicles would be way too big.
Right.
So it was stuff like that. And that's it, like, some of their decision-making process was just fascinating.
I remember throwing them in, like, an X-Wing. I also had, like, one of the Bespin sort of, like, I don't even remember what they're called. Like, H-Wing. I don't have a clue, but, yeah. Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, no, like I said, they're really kind of fascinating. And they have fun with it. There is one thing I will tell you to watch out for. If you watch the Barbie episode, when talking to one of the ex-CEOs of Mattel, she has this, and apparently they finally commented on it. I dug through, like they did, like, the guy who runs the show did, like, a Reddit AMA, and I'm like, someone has to finally answer this question, because, like, I've seen this question pop up, and God knows I need an answer. There is what is apparently just a piece of art in her office, in the background of all the shots with her, that will just, once you see it, you will never unsee it, and it will be the only thing you look at. because it looks like a deflated sex doll in a chair. And it is just weirdly disturbing and completely out of place. And you can tell they're like, we don't know why it was there either. We just shot it, because why would you not? And like, it just becomes the focus every time you see her. It's hysterical. But they also address like the why Barbie has the weird proportions she does.
Oh.
These are things you will learn.
Nice.
So that is my pick of the week as we come up on the hour.
I like it. I like it very much.
Should we cue?
In that case,
yeah.
Yeah, let's cue some music.
All right.
Let's dance on out of here.
Woo! Music.
Woo! Music.